We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, what is up, everybody? Welcome inside the Guilty as Charged podcast here for another Saturday Q&A. Looks like we lost Alex there for a second.
No, I'm still here. It just said my browser has lost connection to my camera. Oh, there we go. Got it back, apparently. Well, here we go.
There we go. Well, Alex, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good.
Starting off the show on. Tyler, what's up, man? How are you?
Doing very well. At the top of the show, I just wanted to thank some of our members at the Hall of Fame level. I know Matt just joined. Rick is all pro level. But we have Bart, TJ, Gabriel, Rex, Andrew, Everett, Jacob, Michael, Larry. A lot of you guys at this level and many other levels. Thank you so much for joining up. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been a new feature, obviously, that we introduced earlier this week. And the responses have been, you know, pretty amazing to see. And so Tyler did a members only video earlier this week comparing the Chargers and the Ravens. And kind of their recent draft history in terms of, you know, reaching and getting value and things like that, which was a fantastic video, which ultimately spawned his video from yesterday, which was comparing the whole AFC West. So shout out to Tyler for that one. I'll be dropping a deep dive into the Chargers pass rush for our YouTube members and Patreon supporters. So please keep an eye out for that. And yeah, that's been our week so far. All right, so we're here for a Q&A. Got a couple questions in already, but as always, if you feel so inclined, the super chat feature is enabled, and we'll make sure that we get to your question today. All right, first question that I wanted to touch on was from Thomas. He wants to know our opinions about if the plethora of talent brought into the DB room will raise the quality of play for others, most notably Michael Davis, Nasir Adderley, etc. Tyler, what do you think about this question?
We sort of addressed this before. I think someone asked about, was it Asante Samuel Jr.? Yeah, I think so. I think everyone gets to do things that best suit them. Whatever that is to Brandon Staley, I think they'll be able to move around, do whatever. Michael Davis will be a much better corner just because he's CB2, CB3, whatever, etc., etc. We've kind of talked about this before. I think everyone helps everybody else.
Yeah, I think everyone helps everyone else. And I think it's less that Michael Davis is going to take some leap or Nasir Adderley is going to take some leap this season and more that they'll have a little bit more balance in terms of doing a little bit less than maybe they were in the Staley defense before, right? Now that you have J.C. Jackson here, who's effectively CB1 instead of Michael Davis, Michael Davis can kind of, you know, we'll still have to move around the field, obviously, but we'll have a little bit less responsibility. And then I think the same is kind of true in Sierra Adderley with the Woods pick. So I think just from that standpoint, it takes a little bit of the weight off their shoulders and more evenly distributes it through the team.
Yeah, I think, you know, adding more talented players, you know, becoming more familiar with the scheme, it all helps make the jobs of these secondary players easier. And, you know, last year, Michael Davis heads into the season as CB1, or, you know, there are times where Asante Samuel Jr. is shadowing, you know, opposing number one receivers like he did with CeeDee Lamb and like he did with, I forget the Steelers' name. He was mostly shadowing Chase Claypool, for example. So now J.C. Jackson can take care of those players. And, you know, you're getting Asante, Michael Davis, Bryce Callahan on twos, threes, and fours, as opposed to, you know, ones, twos, and threes. So, you know, it takes a huge amount of pressure off of those players. And, you know, I think we'll see about the J.T. Woods. I mean, it'll certainly free them up to use Nasir Adderley in a more versatile way and like they wanted to, you know, down the stretch. And get some more designer looks against the run and against the pass, which I'm really excited about. And I think the same thing applies, obviously, to like the pass rush too, with Khalil Mack and being able to, you know, take double teams away from Joey Bosa and, you know, kind of mentor Chris Rumpf and all that good stuff. So I think adding a player like that, we saw a similar effect last year with Corey Linsley, you know, along the offensive line, where he's able to just kind of, you know, raise the floor of that specific unit. I think we'll see that with J.C. Jackson as well as Khalil Mack. So first super chat of the day from Sean O'Brien. Shout out to Sean, always in here on the Q&As doing super chats. Appreciate it. Where do you need to see the biggest improvements in the offense next season? Passing to the second level, between the numbers, running outside the tackles. Alex, what do you think here?
I mean, I think you want to see more deep shots. Like, that's what you kind of want to see if the offensive line is set up correctly and they have the ability to do that. I would say running outside the tackles, but specifically running outside tackles in a way that's like not just Eckler doing it, and some of the other running backs, sure, like behind him. I mean, so really, I guess more deep shots, but I don't think that's like totally necessary. You're going to be fine with Justin Herbert anyway, but definitely better run game behind Eckler in general. And just, you know, with the Spiller pick, hopefully running backs that I think can do more behind Eckler.
Yeah, that's a good call. In terms of deep shots, maybe not even necessarily a deep shot, but one of the things that I wanted and we got out of Gerald Everett, what we're going to get out of Gerald Everett, is just that past 10 yards, maybe not 40 yards downfield, but that middle of the field, you know, catch area that Jared Cook or anybody, even if you target like Austin Eckler, it's going off his hands or off Jared Cook's hands or whatever, over and over again. Jared Cook, you know, 3 for 12, middle of the field. I think the last like 3 years, it was like 40% for him. Jared Everett's like 70%. That's where I'd like to see them improve. And then just going back to, I never finished this. I wish I did, but now I'm far too lazy. But we started to do like a guilty as charged focus, Chargers focused, kind of Pro Football Focus thing. Yeah. And the four games before the bye, so Kansas City, Raiders, Cleveland, Baltimore, the four games before the bye on first down, they only ran it outside 8 times. And then the three games after the bye, New England, Philly, Minnesota, they ran it 19 times. So they really, after the bye, tried to start running it outside more. And now with hopefully a better line and a better running back core, I think they can try to lean into that a little bit more and be really efficient there.
Yeah, you know, the rushing offense, it just in general needs to take a big step forward in year two with Joe Lombardi and all these guys. And I think they will. I mean, you add Isaiah Spiller, you add Zion Johnson. You get another leap forward, as crazy as sounds, from Rashawn Slater. And I think the running game will improve, and it has to. And I think, you know, last year, one of my favorite things to watch was just like the continued involvement of how they would kind of get Austin Eckler outside of the tackles, whether it was through, you know, duo and he would bounce it, or through counter to the outside, or through sweeps or everything like that. And so I think from an outside the tackles perspective, like, they're good. Like, they're set. They know the concepts that they like. So for me, like, I think they need to improve in between the tackles. And I think that's a big reason, obviously, why they drafted Zion Johnson, was because they knew that they could not run to the right side in between the tackles with Michael Schofield and, of course, Storm Norton. So I think the running attack just in general needs to become more well balanced and needs to become more diverse and not just say, okay, our best plays are going to involve Rashawn Slater, Matt Filer, and running to the left. We need to be able to be more balanced across that front. And I think that's something that both Brandon Staley and Tom Telesco mentioned. The deep shots, like, I think they'll come. I really do. Like, I think my stance on Joe Lombardi has been pretty clear. The deep shots were being called. It's just they did not trust. They didn't have the time. They didn't have the skill set. So I think there will be more deep shots next season.
Yeah, I agree. Another one is just I want them to get back to be able to convert on fourth down. Maybe that's just the offensive line. But again, I didn't finish charting this. I went all the way from the Kansas City game, the first one, to the Cincinnati game. But they went convert, 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 convert to fail, fail, convert, fail, convert, fail, fail, convert, convert, fail, fail, convert. And then even in the Raiders game, you saw them fail that conversion. And the Raiders scored, I believe, 3 points off of that one. So getting back to that would be great. I know it's not really, they're not going to make, was this nine in a row like they did to start the year or whatever it is, but something more consistent, because it's almost not even, if you just look at the second half of the season, at least from the Ravens game on, it almost wasn't even worth it.
Somebody asked about a comparison to the Padres. I don't watch any baseball ever, so couldn't tell you.
Where is that? I don't watch the pod. Oh, okay. Oh, sorry. Does it smell like the Padres when they load up on players then end up disappointing? No, this smells like the Chargers when they load up on players then end up disappointing. Yeah. They never loaded up on this many players, but this sounds like a Chargers thing. If they fail to make the postseason, it would still also not surprise me. Also, thank you, Envy Talent, for joining up as a member now. I appreciate that.
Yeah, and dropped a super chat already. His question is, what was your favorite move so far in the offseason, and why is it the Mac trade?
Ooh, that's not my favorite of the offseason. I think it might be JC Jackson, just because you get a younger player, you get a cheaper player. Market-setting guy gets like a, what, 9th, 10th ranked contract?
Yeah, he's
in terms
now.
Of APY. It's ridiculous. Fantastic value. Yeah, I love that one. You get a high-end player who can do everything that the defense wants, who can give the offense what it needs with more possessions. It's an inexpensive contract. I like Khalil Mack a lot, and Khalil Mack might have more impact on the team, but it did cost more, and there's more concern there, and there's an age thing and whatnot. The JC Jackson one, yeah, there's also potential that it doesn't work out. I know some people in the chat are already commenting about the JC Jackson away from New England thing, but I mean, even if it doesn't work out exactly like you hoped, it's still $16.5 million, and they got a really good deal for that. Like, even if he doesn't play as, I think, like a top three corner, top five corner, you're not paying him top five money. So if he plays like a top nine corner, that's fine by me.
Yeah. I guess you could say with the Mac trade sort of set everything else into motion in a sense, yeah. Right? I mean, it was the first move of the offseason. If we're just talking about individually favorite one, I'd probably lean towards JC Jackson as well. But the Mac trade was kind of the first feeling, okay, oh, this offseason's different, right? We're not just going to get like,
yeah.
Of course they got Corey Linsley last year, and did a couple things here and there. But this was like, okay, we're going to actually go star hunting in a sense. After the Mac trade. So that, I think, is probably why it would be my favorite move of the offseason, but there's definitely age and contract-related concerns there that JC Jackson doesn't necessarily have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tom Telesco was on the Peter King show earlier this week, and, he mentioned that the Khalil Mack trade kind of, helped them in free agency to kind of show all these free agents saying, like, look, like, we're being aggressive. We have this, great quarterback. We have this young team on the rise. And we know we have to take big swings. And so he seemed to think that they don't necessarily land JC Jackson without trading for Khalil Mack as kind of the way to open free agency with like, hey, like, we're open for business, let's make some things happen.
Yeah.
So I think from a veteran standpoint, like, obviously for me, it's Khalil Mack. But it's going to be hard for anything over the next few years to beat the Zion Johnson situation with me, kind of advocating him for so much, because like, I didn't think JC Jackson really had a chance. I didn't think Rashawn Slater really had a chance. So, to get Zion Johnson in that way, wow, you guys both just did the same hair thing at the same moment. That was really funny. Okay.
Alex, say a food on three. One, two, three, tacos.
Dumplings.
That was racist.
Wow. He went dumplings.
Damn.
The day after somebody accuses us of being racist.
Whoops, I stepped in it again.
Dreidels.
Oh my god. Dreidel. I made it on a crack.
Oh my shit. Oh my gosh. That was hilarious. Amazing. Oh man. Well, I appreciate Emmy Talon for asking the question. Tyler's mom, of course, in here dropping a big super chat as always. Appreciate that.
Thanks, mom.
Hall of Famer bust. Yes, Hall of Famer bust. Great job. I'm still recovering from that.
Okay.
It's always the Saturday shows, man.
Yeah, that's perfect. I mean, you guys direct the show for us. I appreciate everybody chipping in here. From Nelson Holmes, I know as a Bolts fan of 35 years plus, I'm not even that old, Nelson, that I am more than capable of deluding myself, but don't things feel different this year? So I was going to do, I have a lot of ideas that I throw out because I hate it after a while, but I was going to do an instant impact thing for the Chargers, like do their free agent signings, make an actual instant impact and improve over the previous 3 years when year one with the Chargers. And I was going through to find all the notable free agents they had signed since 2017, so the Lynn era. And I'm going through, and maybe I just, because I forgot, or I don't know what happened. In 2017, it was only Russell Okung. 2018, it was only Mike Pouncey. 2019, it was only Thomas Davis.
Well, Brandon Nimey was one of those years.
Great. But like,
I'm just saying.
Like, yeah. Okay. Okay. Brandon Meebin was one of them. There's nothing like what we've seen. And I know the classic thing for any NFL fan that's not a Chargers fan is, we do this to the Chargers every year. We hype them up, and they fall short of expectations. That's generally been because they've always had Phillip Rivers. They always have Justin Herbert. So there's always some sort of expectation. But now that they're making moves again. Meebane somewhere in there, but Thomas Davis, Mike Pouncey, Russell Okung. That's like one offseason for the Chargers now. Now, it's not going to be that moving forward.
Sure.
But they've put so much. It is so different. And I get it. Things might not work out for the Chargers. It's a very difficult AFC as is, but things are so different. Things are so, so different. Let's see what the results are.
Yeah, you know, I've said this before that it really is different for me. Like, even if you just look at, you know, like a typical Chargers offseason, right, would be like Sebastian Joseph Day. You know, you get like a veteran right tackle on the cheap. Maybe you get Morgan Fox, like, and then you're good, and then that's it, right? So, like, I think they're just so far advanced from what we've seen. And, you know, I said this on the show a few weeks ago, but even to me, getting somebody like Kyle Van Noy, who's like clearly in that ring chasing kind of, you know, timeline of his career. Like, even people like that were just not happening for the Chargers. And so, you know, for him to come in and say on the Pat McAfee show, like, you can feel the sense of urgency to win a championship as soon as you walk in the door. Like, that to me means a lot for this team and where they've kind of come from and what Brandon Staley and Justin Herbert and everybody else, of course, but specifically Staley and Herbert have done for this team really kind of show that it is different. And of course, it's totally possible that they might not win a Super Bowl this year. But I think realistically, like, I think this is the best chance they've had probably since at least 2018, when we all thought that they had a, you know, kind of an outside chance at least. But really, this is the best team that I think I've seen since the LT days.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We lose Alex? I think we lost Alex.
Oh, that's right. Okay, I was just typing. Wait, wait.
What did you do?
I don't know.
Why am I? Oh, gone? Alex is back. Alex is back.
Sorry. Okay. Yeah, my my power went out live on the show. So just came back. All right. After a great start.
Tyler, are you? What is happening?
Oh, I didn't even realize. Oh, something happened to Tyler too. Yeah. Oh, geez.
All right.
Interesting. That's my OnlyFans cam.
All right. Well, we'll get to the next super chat here from Adrian Whiteside. Do you think the NFL will ever crack down on the voidable year BS? For example, no more than two at most. Yeah. So the freaking Eagles signed James Bradbury to a 1-year deal, and then there's four voidable years on top of it. Of course, you know, Taysom Hill has kind of become, you know, the poster child of this. It used to be just the Saints would do this kind of shit, and now everybody is doing it. So I hope something changes here, because it's just like, I understand it's a way to work the cap and all that stuff, but like, James Bradbury is not going to be on the Eagles in 5 years, and they're still going to be paying him money. Like, it just, it doesn't make any sense to me. I hope so, but I don't think the NFL will ever do stuff like this.
I guess I don't think it's a problem, right? Like, in a sense, it's legal money laundering. Like, you're just kind of able to push these, you know, push these contracts into the future, right? Like, all these teams are kind of making use of it, right? Like, obviously, the very public examples, like Taysom Hill. But I wouldn't be shocked if you start to see, you know, quarterback contracts, like, start to do this as well. Of course, you're just going to have, you know, your Josh Allen and Justin Herbert get those big contracts anyway. But, you know, if you're going to push that cap hit into the future because, you know, you have that basically, you know, contention window or what have you, then I think it makes sense to kind of push like 14 or 15, 20 million, whatever it is on the contract into the future, pay that later. And then, you know, basically load up as much as you can for now. So I do think it's BS, like, clearly, but there's already kind of systems in place, I think, in other leagues as well, where you can basically, you know, keep pushing that cap hit, right? We've talked about restructuring contracts, which is kind of a version of this as well, which the Chargers sort of just did with Khalil Mack. So then they take the stress off of Khalil Mack's contract this year and pay that forward in a year or 2 years from now, right? So I guess I don't have a problem with it. I know Howie Roseman is, you know, infamous for doing it, but I think pretty much every GM is catching on that if you have a team that's ready to contend, or if you have a team that's going to be playing for a playoff spot or what have you, then it kind of just makes sense to keep pushing that money down the road. That's what the Saints and all these teams have been doing for a while.
Tyler, you good?
Listen, I mostly don't have a... I don't really care. I hate that I have to calculate, like, oh, this is the 1/5 of this and the 4/5 of that. That's what we have Arjun for. Kareem is asking about how to join as a member, so I was trying to find the link. And I will get that to you, Kareem, as soon as I can.
Okay, cool. Ozma775 wants to know, when do we think that the Chargers will pay Derwin James? Of course, there was an update from Jeremy Fowler this week that both sides kind of expect it to be done. You know, there is some kind of thought process that they could be, they meaning Derwin James' side, could be waiting for the Minka Fitzpatrick extension and then kind of trying to see where they'll stack up in terms of resetting the market. But I fully expect the Derwin James extension to be done this summer. I think it'll follow the same kind of timeline that they did with Joey Bosa. Mm-hmm. And I expect Derwin James to be the highest paid safety in the league, and he absolutely deserves it. For anyone who thinks otherwise, that he's not going to get an extension, please see the pictures of him participating in the groundbreaking of the new facility. Otherwise, I think they would not be having him be there if there were not going to be an extension. So Derwin is a face of the franchise player. He's the key to the defense. He will get an extension this summer, and it's really just a matter of when, not if.
Yeah, I feel the same. It's kind of iffy between 3 days or so, but Joey Bosa was somewhere between July 28th, I think it was announced, and like August 1st. He walked in, was it the first day of camp or whatever it was, and when he was getting tested, and he literally signed it when he walked in. So it'll take a bit for sure, but again, no worries there. I mean, he's priority number two for this team. Almost priority. Like, if he were a more important position than quarterback, which there isn't, he would be priority number one. They love him. Brandon Staley loves him. Like, they've built everything they possibly can around him. So he'll get an extension. It's just when.
Yeah, it's just a matter of when at this point. And I think if you're the Chargers, you want to try to do it as soon as possible, right? To give Derwin James his contract before Minka gets his, and or before any other safeties get paid as well. So I think that's what you probably would want to do. But they're also trying to make sure that this is a fair deal for both sides, right? Even though you're going to make Derwin James eventually at some point the highest paid safety in the league. It's just a matter of kind of how and when you do it. So I don't think there's any concern. They'll get a deal done there. I would predict this summer, you know, we had Joey and Keenan get their contracts very like early on in training camp 2020 and, you know, throughout the preseason, you know, prior to the season starting. So I think that's a fair timeline, although it's a bit of a different situation now because that was the first COVID year. So maybe there's a bit more flexibility this year and they have the ability to get that done earlier as opposed to later. So, they'll get that done when they get it done. And I'm confident it'll be this summer.
Yeah, absolutely. So we got another super chat from Tyler's dad. Shoon family always showing out. Really appreciate it. You guys are awesome. So James C. had a question that I saw earlier, meant to get to it, and then he retyped it. So he wants to know, do Bosa, Mac, Sebastian Joseph Day, Austin Johnson, and Christian Covington create enough early down pass rush? What do you guys think here?
Yeah, I think the answer is yes. I'm actually more concerned about the early down run defense. Because if they decide to go with certain players and get rid of Braden Fajoco, there's a lot of pass rushers on this team. When you rotate out those starters, oh, I see what you mean. Sebastian Joseph Day to Austin Johnson. I think it's fine. My concern is still more the early down run defense if you rotate out certain players.
Yeah, I mean, I think they can create enough pressure. Is the real thing is, do Bosa and Mac stay healthy? Because you can create a situation where I think as long as you have those two there, it does matter what you have in the middle and what you have on the interior, like we've seen with the Chargers in recent years. But to me, having those two dominant edge players just creates so much opportunity for the rest of the interior defensive line as well. Plus, you've upgraded your interior defensive line with Sebastian Joseph Day, Austin Johnson, you know, and then, of course, signing Morgan Fox, having Jerry Tillery in sort of a lesser role, right? But still, you know, getting him on the field a little bit less, but also opening up so he could potentially be more efficient, right? So to me, it all comes down to, are Bosa and Mac healthy? And if the answer is yes, then yes. Mm-hmm. If one of them starts to miss games, if you don't have both of them on the field at the same time, then that gets a lot iffier.
Yeah, you know, I think in terms of the early down pass rush, you know, I'm going to do a deep dive on the pass rush in general, so I don't want to spoil too much of my upcoming video. But if you take Sebastian Joseph Day's 17-game pace from last season, and then you take every single defensive tackle from the Chargers last year, Sebastian Joseph Day would have been more productive in 17 games than every single defensive tackle in terms of pass rushing ability. That's how bad the Chargers defensive tackles were at rushing the passer last year. So you basically got zero production from Christian Covington. I mean, Linval Joseph had one sack and 16 pressures, which was good for him, right? But you know, the defensive tackle pass rushing ability last year was atrocious. And so now you have Sebastian Joseph Day, who had a good track record. Austin Johnson is a fine pass rusher. And I'm not expecting a ton from Christian Covington. So, frankly, I'm not like I said on Thursday show, I want Braden Fajoco to make this roster, not Covington. Covington was not productive at all. And maybe that changes in a smaller role. Mm-hmm. But I'm not worried about the pass rush at this point. I think if you cut Braden Fajoco in favor of Christian Covington, I'm less worried about the run defense than I was last year, but I'm still a little concerned about it.
Wow, Sebastian Joseph Day, 15 pressures. I thought it was less, to be honest. So in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games.
Yeah. So 15 pressures in seven games. If you times that out to 17 game pace, that's 37 total pressures.
That's not bad considering he's a run stuffer. Like, that's his thing.
Yeah.
So great.
And I think it would be like 7.5 sacks too. So that's Sebastian Joseph Day. Ew. Morgan Fox is currently listed as number he can't be number 70 because that's Rashawn Slater's number.
Yeah.
Right. Let me check again. I can check right now.
Maybe that's a typo or something, because I don't think Slater's given up his number to Morgan Fox. Or
no,
maybe he really wants
not.
Yeah. I don't think so.
Well, I know all the numbers in the 90s are taken right now, aren't they?
I guess so.
But he can't wear number 70. I mean, that's just not happening.
Is Rashawn Slater listed at 70? So, scrolling through. Yeah, they're both listed at 70. So
okay, so he's just probably waiting to make a real decision.
What'd he wear?
He wore 91 in Carolina, right?
91 in Carolina and 97 with the Rams.
Yeah.
So, I mean, well.
So, 90 is Andrew Brown. 91 is Forrest Merrill.
Yeah.
92 is Gaziano, 93 Abonia, 94 Rumpf, 95 Covington, 96 Fajoco, 97 Bosa, obviously 98 Johnson, 99 Tillery. So all the numbers in the 90s are taken for now. But I mean, Andrew Brown's not making the roster, neither is Forrest Merrill. So give him 70 in practice, I guess. And then once you cut Forrest Merrill, you're giving him back 91 from last year.
Probably, I'd rather Morgan Fox have 33 than Dean Leonard at this point.
Oh, man.
It's like somebody let him throw on 33. Like, all right, Dean Leonard, 33.
Yeah. It's not great.
To be just be another DB wearing 33 right after Derwin James.
I mean, he could have gone
30.
I mean, I guess he could have gone
all
with
the 30s taken.
28. Spiller's 28, I guess.
He can wear any number he wants to, though, right? Have they opened it up?
21. Not actually, 21 is retired. Never mind. 22 is available.
Who?
Yeah. I was just looking at the numbers and I was like, wait, 21's not a. Yeah.
Wait, what is, what's his face's number?
Who?
Oh, there it is. There's a section for unsigned draft pick. Got it.
Who's but, still. Oh. Oh, do they not have Woods? And okay. Yeah.
I see now. Interesting. Zach Bailey has no number. We have two number ones.
Oh, the quarterback and the kicker?
Yeah.
Isn't Dan... Oh. Wait, what number is DeAndre Carter wearing? Probably wasn't 20, he number one?
82.
Oh, he 82? Switched to 80s.
Oh. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, I imagine we'll see multiple changes after training camp when people are cut.
Mm-hmm.
Probably.
Kyle Van Noy keeps 8.
Yeah. I mean, he could have waited and he could change back to 53 if they want, because Damon Lloyd is currently 53 and he's not making the roster.
Yeah.
But he seemed pretty excited about number 8, so.
He said, what was the 5 + 3 = 8 thing? Like, was that a...
he wore 53 before?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think like, that's what he was saying.
Like, literally, yeah.
No.
Okay. Got it.
And we got a couple new members today.
Oops. Sorry. Yeah, no, we got... another one. Marquise Joseph, thank you for joining. Aaron Ramirez joined earlier. Envy Talent joined. I believe Kareem is trying to figure out how to join. My parents did also join a couple days ago. So we're just loading up, man. Maybe we'll make an OnlyFans.
I've seen a couple questions about Daryl Williams. I think the Chargers are going to run this unit into training camp and then kind of figure it out later. So I'm not expecting any signings of an offensive lineman that could potentially be a starter until they kind of see what they have in training camp.
I'd agree for the most part at this point.
from a first name I won't pronounce, Hyper, who do you think is the player who can be unexpectedly cut like Tyron Johnson last year?
Let me pull the roster back up, I guess.
It's tough to say a specific, but if they really do like Troy Reader enough, Drew Tranquil wouldn't be a surprise cut.
No, they can't.
He would be a surprise cut, but like
he would be a very surprised cut, but they can't cut him.
Yeah, I don't think they would. Ross Ackerman, thank you for joining up as a member as well. Wow, I guess we should do more Saturday live streams. Thank you for joining, everyone. We're going to be at 100 million pretty soon.
So in terms of like surprise that I could end up seeing happening, I think maybe Bryce Callahan. We saw that
You
know, injury clause in there. And, you know, if they kind of look at the two rookies as both being necessary,
mm-hmm.
I could see a world where they kind of take advantage of that injury waiver clause and just cut bait with Bryce Callahan, I guess.
Again, I doubt it. The roster is very
right.
Brendan Hymus. I doubt they would do that. But if Sailor wins out and Klopp's more versatile, and Hymus ends up being a practice squad guy. I don't know.
Pain.
No.
Yeah. Well, again, I doubt it, but
not anyone who like sticks out in my mind, but also kind of waiting till we get to training camp to see that. Cause I mean, the real reason that Tyron Johnson was so surprising was because of what he was doing, you know, in training camp and all the footage of him going up on those deep routes and winning those. Like, to me, that's what made it more surprising than anything is that we thought based on you guys being there in training camp and, you know, us watching it, that he was having a great training camp and then was cut. So I think that's more what Tyron Johnson is kind of in line with. I don't know if there's a player off the top of my head that I can think of will be like that this year. Certainly not really a lot of skill position players that I can think of on the top of my head, especially because they didn't draft a receiver or make a big addition there.
Moose Sarwe mentioned Alohi Gilman. I wouldn't be very surprised.
Yeah, that wouldn't be surprising to me.
I think if you run with four safeties, you're keeping the guy that they drafted last year, Mark Webb, you're keeping Woods, and then obviously you're keeping the starter. So they could certainly choose to keep five, but I think Alohi is certainly on the bubble at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people are mentioning Joshua Kelly, Larry Roundtree in the chat. Would that be surprising? I don't think so at this point.
Yeah. No, it wouldn't be surprising. Both would be surprising.
Yeah, I guess that one.
If RB3. If they
get both for Kevin Marks, that'd be very surprising.
I'd do that.
I would as well. Optimus Rhyme, if Norton and Pipkins don't work out, do you draft RT round one next year? Yes.
Yeah. It's the only current true weakness. Yeah. So yeah, currently.
Based on need, sure, but talk to me about the draft in 7 months. I mean, we're sort of I don't even know who the right tackle prospects are. Who knows where the Chargers will be drafting either. Hopefully with the 32nd pick, but we just don't know where they're going to be and what players are going to be available. Injuries that happened this year, just a lot of uncertainty.
I mean, I think if you're, you know, kind of projecting future needs, I think obviously right tackle would be one. I think tight end could be one, you know, depending on how the class shakes out. But, you know, if you're picking in the late 20s and next year's tight end class is better than this year's class, maybe you take a chance on a real Hunter Henry replacement, a long-term one. Maybe receiver, depending on how you feel about Keenan Allen's age at that point, or Josh Palmer's development. So, I mean, right tackle is the obvious one. That's going to be a need next year, and they're not going to have the money to sign a real legitimate right tackle. So it's kind of the low-hanging fruit.
Mm-hmm. Jarrett Holybee has signed up. Thank you. You guys are very nice. All of a sudden, everybody's just showing up. I really appreciate it, guys. Super chat from NV Talent, going back in time, but favorite part of the Chargers release schedule, and do you think our special teams will be at least in the middle of the pack? What do you guys think?
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, well, I was waiting to see if one of you guys wanted to chime in first. I think in terms of the schedule release, like the specific video, I mean, it's hard to beat that Jacksonville Jaguars screenshot with, you know, the Urban Meyer mockery. And then, of course, you have the Philip Rivers 90-yard touchdown video in the back. The Raiders trash can or dumpster was really funny as well. So those would be my two favorites there. And they tweeted the thing out again yesterday, and I guess it did better than the Avatar 2 trailer, which is just like amazing to me, which because, I mean, Avatar 2 is this huge movie budget-wise, right? And the Chargers probably didn't spend that much money on, you know, their anime schedule release, and it did better than Avatar 2. So I think that's just really cool.
Okay, so I think the best part is obviously the Urban Meyer thing, because fuck Urban Meyer. But who actually wanted an Avatar 2? Is there can anyone name a single character from Avatar? I cannot. Yeah. Who wanted this movie other than James Cameron?
What's the highest grossing movie of all time, though?
Avatar. It's Avatar, but like we waited 14 those people. Years. You should make a sequel like 2-3 years later. Don't wait 14. I don't even remember any of the characters. You know, like
Jake Sully. Wait, I got it. I pulled that.
Yeah, that's the human version, right? Yeah.
Couldn't tell you anything about a cell, but Jake Sully is a character from Avatar.
But it's just like I don't know, like. The whole thing about the first Avatar was, oh, it's this big visual experience. But, like, the trailer didn't even look good. Like, it just looked like a CGI. Ugh. Like, I don't know. Who wants that? It's not groundbreaking anymore. I don't know. Sorry, I'm shitting on Avatar. But I saw that trailer in the movie theater, and I don't even know why anyone would want it.
Oh, did you walk like Doctor Strange?
Yeah,
I never go to the movies. Good for you.
I know. I never go to the movies.
He went to the movies, and he went to a movie where you have to know, like, 17 previous movies.
No, I understood most of it. It was all right. I didn't mind it.
I mean, you can't give proper judgment on a show where you don't know.
No. Okay, the whole Marvel thing when they put out like schlock movies is like, oh well, you have to watch the whole 25. No, it's like either the movie is good or it isn't. Like I could show people like the original Spider-Man movies, Christopher Nolan's Batman trilogy. And you could show that to someone who knows nothing about comics and they enjoy it. Like, so the whole
excuse. Those are standalone movies.
I understand that. But showing someone, like, you know, expecting 45 cameos and expecting people to understand who it is, and that means your movie's not good if you don't get it. Like, I don't know. There's part of me that's just like, you can make your standalone movies a little bit better. And Marvel's done that before, like, with their movies, right? So I don't know.
How far are we from the movie being released? Is it 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
Over 2 weeks ago?
Uh-huh.
All right. I won't spoil it, but how much did your theater pop with a certain appearance?
A whole lot, man. A whole lot.
Wait.
The one that wasn't in the trailer.
I assume we're talking about The Office.
You can't spoil it.
I don't think that's spoiling it, but I'll just say The Office.
Yes, but everyone knows what you're talking about now.
No. Steve Carell is in the movie. He cameos that, actually. No,
he just pops out and says, that's what she said, and leaves.
Yeah. I thought it was a fun cameo, but, like, I don't know. I also just didn't like the writing of the movie that much, because, like, it's hard to talk about it without spoilers. But there's a scene where they, like, have this, like, all-powerful being that could, like, end everything, and then they just end up messing it up because one of the characters says a line towards that character that's like really weirdly worded, and then she shuts his mouth. Like, I don't know, that part was weird, and I don't know,
I have no idea who you're talking about. Nelson Holmes, thank you for signing up. A lot of new people in the chat signing up as members, so I thank you thanks for joining us today and finding us today. We're not that racist, I promise.
We're not racist. All right, getting back to Envy's special teams question, though, I do think that the special teams unit will make some improvements this year. I mean, for the simple fact that they're going to head into the season without Tristan Vizcaino and Larry Roundtree and KJ Hill returning and kicking. Yeah. So the specialists will be better. I think you have Josh Harris there for an obvious reason, you know, as arguably the best long snapper in the sport. I couldn't tell you, but he's certainly the highest paid longest long snapper in the sport. So I think it will be better. I think you take Nick Niemann again as kind of last year's best special teams player, you know, you allow him another year to develop in that role. And I think they'll be better this year. They were middle of the pack over the last half of the season once they got the returner and kicker situation settled. Mm-hmm. It's just they were so bad in the first 7 weeks that it was too hard for them to like really overcome that. But I want to say they ended up being like 26th or 27th in DVOA overall, which is great considering they were on like a truly historically bad pace after the first seven games. Yeah, so it kind of shows you the value of Andre Roberts and Dustin Hopkins. So I think special teams will be at least average for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And even a big culprit early on for them struggling was Chris Rumpf, an awful kickoff return blocker, or the wing on kickoff return. Second half of the season was so much better. Part of that, just that with Andre Roberts, they got so much better on kickoff returns. Now, just starting with a veteran unit with Josh Harris, friend of the show now, I can say that they'll be a lot better.
Yeah, I believe in DeAndre Carter. I mean, as their return man, Dustin Hopkins, there's no real qualms there. I mean, I think he's going to do what he did last year. The real issue for me is punting, because they had pretty bad punt blocking last year. Ty Long over the last couple of years has, you know, declined, and now they're replacing him with J.K. Scott. I'll curious to see how that one pans out, because I mean, we've seen the Chargers get blocked before, you know, on some pretty important moments in games. So that's the one that, if I'm talking about special teams, kind of keeps me up at night.
Sure.
But overall, they should, you know, finish as a pretty average special teams team, hopefully higher.
Yeah, I was a little surprised that they didn't sign like a legitimate competition for J.K. Scott. Like, you know, as I said on the Discord, like, we kind of expect Ben Griffiths to be signed and be that competition, but I don't really know if that's like legit competition. That kind of just feels like what they did with what was his name, the guy from the Jets, Lachlan Edwards. So we'll see. I mean, J.K. Scott statistically is better than Ty Long, but it's not by much.
So, one spot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, maybe they just, this is part of the fourth down philosophy, right? I mean, they're going to be going for fourth downs, you know, more often than the average NFL team. So maybe in that situation, like, you don't need like a terrific punter, but I do think there will be times where they just, you know, need like a league average punter. I don't know if J.K. Scott is that. We'll kind of find out.
Yeah,
I don't think this will happen, but so people ask that question, or a couple people in the chat talking about fourth downs, going for it on fourth down. Do you think that the Chargers will go for it less on fourth down? Because I think it's the identity of their team.
No.
The answer is going to be no.
Yeah, the answer is no.
What I'm trying to say is Staley, and Herbert said that Staley came to him on that podcast and said, listen, you have to go get it. You have to go learn to not be a gauche, you know, gee, all golly shucks guy. I don't think it'll, again, I think they'll maintain that as their identity, but I think that was part of it. And I'm curious if they dial it back a little bit this year, because now Herbert has concentrated on that mentality. He's a bit more alpha this year because of what happened last year. But again, I think they'll stay the same.
I think if anything, they'll be more aggressive, to be honest with you, because now they actually have a good defense that can like get stops and make plays. So, I mean, Brandon Staley is not going to change his identity and the identity of his team, because they have a better defense. Like, if anything, I feel like they'd be more aggressive. So I think his whole thing, right, is giving Justin Herbert more opportunities to affect the game. And presumably Justin Herbert improves again. You know, Zion Johnson comes in and improves the offensive line. Isaiah Spiller comes in and improves the running game. If the offense is better, why would you not be more aggressive is I guess what I'm trying to say here.
Yeah, no, I think that they'll still be aggressive. I certainly don't think the media and their criticism of what happened with the Raiders in week 18 is going to faze Brandon Staley or any of those people at all. What was their fourth down attempt rate last year? Do we know that? Not a number I have off the top of my head.
I know they weren't like the most aggressive teams. Yeah. I want to say I was actually like the Lions, but again, they were trailing a lot. So maybe that's kind of different.
The only reason I bring up that number and what it might be is just if they're going, it could be slightly less that they end up going for it just because, you know, maybe they don't find themselves in as many fourth down situations as they do last year. Or, you know, the offense is just drastically better on the first three downs, right? If you get a better run game, for example, then that would kind of lead to going for it less either.
That's a good point.
But yeah, I don't know at this point. Yeah, I'm really curious, I guess, how they'll attack fourth downs in their own territory, because I feel like it started out as Brandon Staley, you know, going for fourth downs when he really should have gone for it all the time. But then I think there's always going to be the debates on, like, you know, fourth down inside your own 23, you know, right? Like, are you going to do it in that situation? And if the answer is still yes at this point, then I think you sort of have your answer with the philosophy, but I'm curious to see how that gets tested, particularly earlier in the season or just depending on the nature of some games.
Yeah, the Chargers tied with the Panthers for the third most fourth down attempts behind the Chicago Bears and Detroit Lions. I don't know how much I want to be around the Lions, Bears, Panthers, Washington football team, Jaguars, and Giants, but that's where the Chargers are, right in the middle of those guys.
Yeah, I mean, obviously those are all so... You know, I was laughing the other day, though, because somebody sent a clip from Good Morning Football, and one of the rotating guest hosts was like, well, Brandon Staley, too, hopefully he learns from those fourth down mistakes. It's like, A, they're not mistakes, and B, like, he's not going to change his philosophy. Like, I don't know why anybody would have the impression that he's going to change who he is because he's, you know, more comfortable as a head coach. Like, that's not happening.
Right. No, it's ridiculous. Or did we lose? Steven frozen for you?
Oh. No, he's okay, I think.
I'm moving around.
I'm moving around. I'll have technical difficulties today, I guess.
Yeah. All right. We had an interesting question earlier, too, I wanted to get to. What kind of leap do you guys expect from Josh Palmer?
First of all, Wyatt, thanks for becoming a new member. What kind of leap do I expect from him? Let's look at his stats from last year first. If anybody else wants to jump
in. Did he have like 200 yards? Something like that? I don't remember off the top of my head.
353, actually.
Okay, that was higher than I thought.
That was actually more than I thought, to be honest.
Yeah, I think he got... I think he got
that giant start.
Yeah, hot towards the end of the season. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Some of them are sort of manufactured. 24-yard, the one jump ball target against New England.
And then the big 23-yard versus the Raiders, right?
Mm-hmm. Which, like, fine. But it depends because Houston was Keenan Allen out and Mike Williams? Or just Mike Williams?
Mike Williams, I think.
Okay, so he got a start there. Giants, he got a start there. I mean, again, it's kind of dependent.
Right.
For the most part, it's 24, 22, 22, 17, 25 yards. So.
But the early parts of the season, he wasn't super involved, right?
No. 500 yards?
Yeah.
450?
Yeah.
Depends on how many starts.
I think it could be anywhere from 400 to 500 yards. You could even, if Keenan Allen's hurt for a period of time, if Mike Williams is hurt, you could push that to like 600, like in theory. Yeah, I don't know if there's no real like straight trajectory here from like, oh, he's going to go from wide receiver 4 to wide receiver 3, and you know these will be his numbers. I think he's a really tough player to project. Similar a little bit to what we talked about with the running backs, right? You know, we were projecting Isaiah Spiller's stats this weekend or on this week's past show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could see Isaiah Spiller having a huge season if Austin Ekeler misses some games, a pretty good season if, you know, he just fills the RB2 role, and then there's also kind of a range of outcomes where maybe Joshua Kelly and Larry Roundtree are still getting snaps, right, and still getting some touches. So I think Josh Palmer is kind of a very similar sort of case study where just a lot of it depends on just the factors around him at the time.
Yeah, it depends where they lean.
There's so many mouths to feed on this offense. Yeah. Like, I think you could see Gerald Everett, you know, kind of outproducing Jared Cook, but also, like, again, there, you know, there's more people to feed. Isaiah Spiller is certainly going to have more targets than any of the other running backs the Chargers had last year. So I think Josh Palmer will be better. He'll be more involved, and he's going to play more often and earlier in the season. So I expect him to be more of a presence. I don't know if that's going to result in him having like 700 yards and 5 touchdowns or something that, but I think he'll be more involved from the jump, which is going to make them harder to guard on offense.
All right, let's say Jalen Guyton, Josh Palmer, who has more yards?
I think Guyton, I would, just because of how those yards will happen.
Yeah, I mean, I would say Guyton. It could be closer if Guyton isn't getting those like go ball opportunities as much, or maybe the offensive line gets banged up. I think that's the situation where it would be closer. But I think Jalen Guyton would, just because of the nature of his play, have more. But also, I don't think him having more means like he took more of a leap than Palmer, or like he was better than Palmer, because their games are so different. And at the end of the day, talking about like improvement for either of them, ultimately they've invested, you know, $40 million per year annually in Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, right? So on some level, there's a really low ceiling, I would say, on like what a breakout season is for either of them statistically, mm-hmm. and just kind of in game, I guess, as well.
Yeah, whoever it is, it's going to be their fifth most productive receiving option, the two starters, Eckler, Everett, and then one of them. I can't believe they split it so evenly with targets. 46 for Guyton, 45 for Palmer. So close.
That is funny. And, you know, people are pointing out to DeAndre Carter, likely more involved than Andre Roberts.
Oh, yeah, no, DeAndre I'd be pretty Carter surprised will be if certainly more involved.
Yeah. Donald Parham could certainly take a jump forward. I mean, Trey McKitty had like 3 catches last year. So, you know, it's going to be interesting because, like, I don't know if Justin Herbert's going to be able to throw for as many yards as he did last year, just because presumably they're leading more games. You have a better rushing attack. So there's less yards to go around. I'm just kind of wondering where, like, who's going to get the kind of decrease in production next year?
Possibly. It's hard to say, but Mike Williams? I don't know.
Well, what did Mike Williams have last year? 1,100 yards?
1,146.
Yeah, him and Keenan both were around 1,100.
I'm just looking at, after that really hot start, they just pivoted away from him, also because of injuries. But then he finished with that Raiders game, though, so it's so hard to tell. But then you see 27, 19, 58, 33, 97, 39, 110, 61, 49, 63. You know, wasn't that 82, 91, 122, 165 kind of start?
I mean, I would obviously love, you know, Justin Herbert to throw for more yards, but I just think, like, game script is going to be more positive this year. And you're not going to have as many long fields. Hopefully you get more turnovers, more short fields. Again, Isaiah Spiller being an actual legitimate RB2, hopefully we'll all kind of, I'm not going to like predict like 4,500 yards for Justin Herbert, but you know, I don't think it's like 100% guaranteed that he crosses 5,000 again.
Yeah. I don't know if Tyler could look this up, but what was Keenan's like first half production versus second half of the season production? Because I think if you're looking for one player who I think could like decline in production, it's probably him. Not in a way where I think he'll be like significantly under 1,000 yards. I mean, his range is really like 900 to 1,100, but he could be closer to the lower end of that, I guess, if you are getting Josh Palmer, you know, and some of these other guys more involved. You know, maybe he has to miss a game or two with, you know, hamstring or something, getting older. That's kind of the one I would look at. But Mike Williams, obviously, you know, there's a bit of an injury nature to his game as well. And just some of the reckless nature of his game. So
yeah, Keenan Allen was, I mean, if you're looking at yards, started hot with, 208 yards in two games, and then it's like that 50, 36, 75.
Yeah.
And then a lot of, 50-ish, 40-yard games. But then, like, you look at the Cincinnati game, he had 34 yards, but two touchdowns, and I believe
right
another fourth down conversion or whatever. Or that was yeah, a touchdown. So he had more touchdowns to end the year. He had for Keenan Allen, he had four in the last five yeah games, only two before that.
So but weird, man. The whole, like, he's yeah always getting six touchdowns. It's the weirdest thing.
I think that just plays into it being a little bit more situational, right? Like, I think Keenan could start the year hot and then taper off, or you could say the same thing for Mike Williams, or maybe it's the opposite this year. Both of them are still going to wind up somewhere around 1,000 or so yards, but I think if you're looking for a guy to be on the lower end of that, I'd probably guess it's maybe a slight decrease in Keenan Allen production between the two.
Yeah, I think that's where I would lean as well. I think, we've seen Justin Herbert and Mike Williams kind of be, on the up and up with their relationship. I think there was a lot of opportunities for them, even in those games where he wasn't necessarily producing a lot. Like, there were definitely opportunities where he was open. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, people kind of hold the first Raiders game against him when he only had like the two catches for 18 yards or whatever. But he was absolutely dusting Trayvon Mullen in that game, and they were just going towards the tight end. So
yeah,
there was that one miss where it could have been like an 80-yard touchdown or something.
It was wide open. Yeah, Herbert just missed him.
Yeah, I think it's also a similar version of the Guyton Palmer discussion, where like if we're talking about between Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, right? Like, Mike Williams is going to get those jump ball opportunities. He's more likely to get that big 40, 50 yard grab than Keenan is. So, I mean, just statistically, I think that matters too.
Yeah, I mean, once we get more information, last year we did a full stat prediction for everybody like relevant, and we'll probably do that again this year, around training campish. So we'll be able to have more information at that point and hopefully, give some more accurate stats there. All right, we got a couple more minutes here, so we will take a few more questions. Skylar Hobson joined as a member today as well, so shout out to Skylar. So if you haven't asked a question, now is the time, because we just got a couple more minutes here before we got to head out. So make it a good couple questions.
I kind of like this one because it does break them. Like, there's so many firsts to this team. He hasn't done this yet, I don't think. What are the odds Telesco pulls off an in-season trade?
And he did do an in-season trade. It was
A real one.
Like, for a really good player as opposed to like
something more useful, I'll say that.
I mean, if we're talking about like something in the vein of like Von Miller to the Rams this year, like that, I guess, is kind of like what people are looking for, like a big defensive offensive acquisition. I think it would have to be for somebody who's like on an expiring contract at this point, like in the vein of Von Miller or something like that from the Rams last year. I just don't know if they view them. It also depends on how they start the year, right? If they start the year kind of like struggling and they're 3-4 or something, that probably makes it a little less likely versus if they start 5-2, 6-1, and they're, really just hoarding all their assets together and, say, here's a second and third round pick for whichever player, then like, I think that's possible. We'll find out who the names are when they're on the block though, from those teams that are selling, I guess is really the interesting thing. But, I'll put it at like 30%. I don't believe it's very high now, but if the Chargers do get hot, they start 6-1 or 5-2 or something like that. And then, right before the trade deadline, they want to go kind of all in on this season. Then, I think it's possible they package some picks together, much like they did for Khalil Mack, like we just saw. Probably would have to be for a player who's on like an expiring deal, though.
Yeah, definitely. Are we going to do the Andre Dillard for the 15th year in a row? That's like the favorite for the last 4 years.
I mean, I guess that's possible, but really probably only in a world where like Pipkins Norton goes down or something like that, or they kick Filer out to right tackle and it doesn't work, whatever combination it is. Like, I think they would have to be like pretty desperate to do that. Especially for like a Dillard who's on last year's deal. I don't know. I don't think they would do it, but, I'd still be around like 25, 30%.
I'd be very shocked if they like a because the Rams gave up like two future third picks of them, if I'm not mistaken. And I was not that, but I think they a swing for like a, you know, if somebody gets injured in the room or the room, you go get just like a solid veteran for like sixth round pick, I think is possible this year.
Yeah.
John asked another super chat and Bennett, Harry, her asking like
what would
Justin Herbert's favorite ice or
if we made a Herbert ice cream, what would we add to it?
Oh, like if we made a Herbert themed ice cream, what would we put in it?
Vanilla based for sure. That's kind of him too. Like,
I feel like it'd be just something. Like, know if we have to rate something, like he'd be just like cookies and cream guy or something.
Yeah, I don't know. He's like a mint chip guy.
He totally is a mint chip guy. You're right.
Which is fine. I'm just saying, you know,
cream is disgusting.
Okay. I mean, yeah, brisket flavored ice cream, with a scoop of peanut butter.
We always end on food conversation. I think that's what Sean was here for. Alex, any thoughts on Justin Herbert's favorite ice cream?
Other than the fact it would be vanilla based, I have no other thoughts.
Got another one. Yeah. Got to finish with more food.
Oh.
Crisp burrito.
Depends on the sandwich. What sandwich are we talking about here? I don't know. I would lean towards burrito, but depends on the sandwich. Like we're just talking like ham and cheese here. I don't know. Probably the burrito.
Yeah. If we're just talking like in between two slices of bread or a croissant sandwich versus a breakfast burrito, if we somehow count like a lobster eggs Benedict as a sandwich, then that. But no, breakfast burrito for me.
Fancy guy over here. Lobster for breakfast.
South Orange County, baby.
All right, that's gonna do it. Thank you everyone for joining our membership opportunities on YouTube. There's a Discord in there as well, so if you join up as a member, you can get in on that fun. We'll be going live on Monday for our next episode. Stay tuned for that. And all the YouTube members and Patreon supporters, keep an eye out for my pass rush video. We'll be dropping tomorrow. So that's going to do it for us today, guys. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you next time.